Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb Keith, and the Thinking Fellows is brought to you by the 1517 Podcast Network of shows. You can go to 1517.org/podcasts to see all of our shows there. Today, I am joined by Bruce Hillman, Adam Francisco, and Scott Keith to discuss an episode on technology. This is coming on the heels of an episode on science. And we're asking the question today, is technology good? I figured this would be related to some of the science talk because people commonly wrap up technology into science as either a product of science or sometimes just refer to it as science itself. In fact, there's like a Bill Burr skit I saw just a couple days ago about Steve Jobs and the iPhone. And, you know, the joke is that Jobs would walk into a room and yell at a bunch of, quote, scientists to build him whatever technology.
That was a really funny skit.
He wanted. So I think
eats a really pretentious fruit like a pear.
Yeah. I would probably call those people engineers, but for the most part. But we have a whole set of categories.
That was a great idea. I want all this music in here.
Right.
Make it happen. Sorry. Adam doesn't think it's funny because Adam doesn't understand technology.
So the question
that was the iPod, Adam. It was a device that you could listen to your music on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the question is technology good? Now, when we say the word technology, I think one of the problems is today is that we almost exclusively mean computer technology. Advancements in software and hardware of personal computing devices or the computers that are inside of other things like cars, airplanes, whatever. But technology basically includes any material advancements that humans make with working with physical materials and forming them and shaping them into usable things. So,
like the wheel.
The wheel is technology, right?
A Karuka plow in the Middle Ages. The Bobkin point in the Hundred Years' War.
Wow. The
going deep.
The printing press, right?
He does follow
famous
some
technology of the Reformation, right? That makes the Reformation possible, some would argue. So technology has always been around as long as there have been people. But I think part of what we're asking when I ask the question, is technology good? Is the technological advancement that we live with now or progress, technological progress that we are seeing and experiencing a good thing versus asking sort of the universal question, because there's sort of an assumed yes or at the very least it's neutral because we all are the benefactors of countless technologies.
Isn't it also inevitable? I mean, it's just inevitable. Even if you don't like it, it's just inevitable.
It waxes and wanes depending on a lot of things. Like in history, there's been times of huge technological advancement and oftentimes followed by times where there's not been much. I mean, a good for instance to that is, you know, your quality of life as far as how it was impacted by technology wouldn't have looked much different, like, just after the fall of the Roman Empire until, like, the beginning of what we call the Renaissance. For many hundreds of years, you would have had a very, very similar way of life that was not impacted by a huge technological advancement. There's lots of reasons for that, including population rates and the whole nine yards. But it is inevitable in a sense, but it's inevitable mostly during times of relative prosperity in societies that are experiencing times of relative prosperity. That's why you'll often see, especially in our modern age, technological advancements will jump out of one culture and then will be bled down to other cultures. And it's usually the cultures that are experiencing, times of wealth and prosperity and good birth rates and the whole nine yards. I think we're going to see a time, we will all see, even me, and I'm the oldest among us, I believe, we'll see a time when technological advancements slow down now rather than advance, and it's going to be because of the waning birth rate in the West.
What was the
with AI now?
Yeah. What was the that's,
But AI is dependent on the engineers that build and program the AI, and there'll be fewer of those.
I would love to.
When it keeps increasing until John Connor comes and defeats.
Well, I did see that meme too. It's pretty funny, and I'm a Terminator aficionado, so I understand what you're speaking. That was a funny meme. The young John Connor on his motorcycle, looking at him, going like that, kind of squinting, going, John Connor looking at the rest of us for what is it? Playing footsie with AI.
Playing footsie with AI. That's good. What was the book you read about sort of the waxing and waning of innovation a while ago? I think it'd be a good one to recommend. I don't remember the...
That was the What to Expect When No One's Expecting. Very good. I read it. Actually, read
it. Baby's
so good.
No, that's not the one. It was the one about innovation.
Graphics.
Had the arguments about like...
Well, that book has the arguments in there about that. About
how... I read one that claimed that there has been no innovations.
Oh, God.
The 50s.
That was years. You're going to have to give me a hot minute. That was like 4 years ago.
I think that one is one I would suggest in this, along the themes of...
I will find it.
Innovation really waxes and wanes. I think... One of the reasons I hear this question come up is because people perceive that there is a certain level of evil being enabled by technology today that maybe wasn't in the past. And I think that would maybe be a good conversation to have. Some examples would be just that as technology progresses and becomes more advanced, questions about how humans can apply it or ought to put limits on its application come up. So I think social media is a great example of something that everybody sort of adopted very quickly, and now there are questions about its impact. So there's some obvious data about how negative its impact is on the psychology and well-being of teenagers, for instance, and their formation of their identity and their self-worth and things like that, and how damaging it has been and how it might be linked to things like depression and suicidality. And that's certainly the mass adoption of technology. I think medical technology is another great one. Medical technology in many ways has been a miracle, extending or making certain ailments sort of disappear in our lifetime or treatable in our lifetimes. But in other ways, you would say that, say, hormone blockers, puberty blockers for teenagers or young adults or prepubescent children is also the advancement of technology and horrendously evil. So is there something particularly worrying or evil about the fact that we have progressed so far technologically?
I think in a day and age where there's no moral clarity, absolutely. I think that's the big thing.
I disagree, but go ahead.
Well, I think, so like technology... Going back to your earlier question, it's applied science, right? It's just stuff that can make our life a lot easier and you know, more comfortable or whatever. So it's, in a way, I'd say I don't ask myself the question about technology very often. You're the one who has to ask me these kind of questions because I don't think about it, right? But it's neutral. It's how you use it, right? And if you've got a culture, so one of the arguments we used to make back when I taught at universities defending liberal arts or humanities is that what the liberal arts do is helps individuals think how to use their money wisely or use technology wisely, you know. And if you get in a day and age where where we can't even answer what a woman is, or we're stifling the maturation process of a person towards puberty. I mean, that's bonkers. So, here's Scott's favorite topic: mid-20th century, World War I, World War II. You know, you got this great technology, and you got a whole bunch of people whose moral compass is at least out of line, and awful things happen.
Yeah,
mustard gas is developed. You know, they just figure out better ways to, more efficient ways to kill lots and lots of people. But in the same way, maybe it helped bring the war to an end sooner. I don't know.
Well, I would say even for
the atomic bomb.
But sooner, but not with less death. I mean, you think of the amount of, I don't know the exact numbers, but the number of people that died. We referenced the 30 Years' War, I think, in the last episode. The number of people that died in the 30 Years' War all together over the course of 30 years is similar to the number of people that died during the 4 years of World War One.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were the population was greater, and so like per capita, right? It's a smaller percentage of the overall population, but the numbers are the same in almost a tenth of the time.
I think you could almost make this episode into an episode on original sin, hopping on sort of the back of what you're saying, Adam, which is that technology is the engineering and application of physical stuff into things that people use, which means it will be used for the whole spectrum of evil to good that people live their lives and have motivation towards, which is to say that, as Bruce is saying, technology is inevitable. It is also inevitable that there will be evil uses and applications because a human creature is, by nature, sinful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only problem with simplifying it down to that is that we find a certain level of use of technology totally fine or even good by sinful creatures using it. And then there's this whole other section of horrendous or greatly evil, right? There might be posting something kind of mean. A mean tweet is bad, and maybe a sinful use of technology. And then there's chemically castrating people or killing the masses with mustard gas, or you name it, right? And so even within this sort of spectrum of original sin, I think technology helps us ask the question, if everybody's sinful, why are some people particularly evil, or why are some people using things in a particularly evil way, and why are others seemingly not?
I was waiting for Bruce because he earlier said he disagreed with Adam, so I was doing a pregnant pause to wait for Bruce.
I guess I just disagreed with Adam's affirmation, but not his explanation. So when he said yes that it's like more evil today or whatever you asked Caleb, I was like, oh, I don't agree with that. But
I don't know that it's more evil. I just think culturally, there's certainly less moral ground people stand on, shared moral ground.
So there's,
does that make sense?
On that point, there's an interesting critique by a French postmodernist, who I think actually isn't well known, will become more well known. No, Adam, I think this is the only postmodernist you may agree with.
That's a big statement.
Jean Baudrillard.
No.
what he argued is that history is eventually, he says history kind of takes three turns, but in the final turn, the postmodern turn, which leaves modernism, he deals with technology. That's the main area that he's focusing on. But particularly, he says there's a new type of technology that emerges out of modernism that didn't exist in human history before. He calls it media. And for him, media is a certain kind of technology that comes about with the Industrial Revolution. And what's particularly problematic about it for morals and for subjectivity and all this is that media isn't in, like, if you look at high art in, say, the Middle Ages, it depicts religious stories and it tries to show like myths in art and it shows real life. But then you get like movies, and movies are, he calls them simulacra. They're not a painting. They look the most real, but they're not real. They're still light and sound. They're not a real thing. But we get lost in them. We identify with them, and they start to inscribe in us. And what gets particularly dangerous, he thinks, is when postmodernism comes about, because what happens is that we are no longer in touch with reality because of media. So media actually leads to subjectivity and moral relativism. But in postmodernism, it's doubled. So what happens is that the media that existed in modernism starts to create new truths, in quotes, that aren't actually real. And then we start to believe those fake simulacra as though they were real. And then that changes the culture away from objective truth. So two examples to make this make sense that are pretty simple. If you ask a young girl, to draw a princess today, she doesn't draw what a princess ever really looked like. She draws what a Disney princess looks like. But the problem is that a Disney princess isn't what a princess looks like. It's a copy of a copy. So it's like, it's Disney's version of what a fantasy princess is like, which is a step removed from what a real princess back in the Middle Ages actually looked like. So now the idea of princess is fake. It's caught up in mass culture. It's caught up in reality TV does this. You know, we as social media does this. We think we're watching real lives when we turn on, even though we kind of know we're not. News does this. And what he's arguing is that this leads to the decline in the West and the decline of culture. Technology actually has a role in moral degradation, media particularly, media technology, because it has us believe that false things are true. And then that shapes our culture to become a false culture. So what don't you like about that, Adam?
As he said, the Gulf War didn't take place. That's my issue with him.
Adam's the one issue voter when it comes to this guy.
One other example, not from postmodernism, but just from a scholar, Stephen L. Carter.
Can I? I mean, I don't want to do it. What does he mean it didn't take place?
Because we, it, he didn't mean it actually did not
okay.
take place.
He means just like a creation of the media.
Just going after media. So, I mean, I got zero issue with that sort of thing. And I'm happy that I think, you know, towards it, would he die about 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago? I was very happy to see him distance himself from postmodern critique. I just think he's just over analysis. You know, he's like, maybe it's because I'm grumpy. Scott made me grumpy yesterday about analysis, and
I did. I called him twice too.
Here's, I think, another.
But he's a Frenchman. That's another reason why I don't like him.
Yeah. Wow.
Another example of this critique, but not at all coming from postmodernism, is Stephen L. Carter, who's a Christian legal scholar. He taught constitutional law at Yale for years. And he has a lot of books on Christianity and politics that are really well thought out. And he had a thing a few years ago during the Second Gulf War where he was just disturbed by the use of drones. He didn't think we shouldn't use them. That he wasn't making that argument at all. In fact, if we have them, we should use them. But what disturbed him was there was no moral conversation about using drones that was taking place at government levels. And for him, his argument was, what happens when you can start to kill people and you never risk your own people in doing that? And you're distanced from the people you're killing. It's all on a TV screen and you could be in another part of the world. And does that, the question he raises is, does that make it easier to justify killing when everybody starts using drones?
Yes.
It's this fear.
Because
you're not in touch with, like, you're not.
Like, I just solved the conundrum in this giant book in like 10 seconds.
What did you say?
I said, yes. It obviously makes it easier to kill people because there's no consequence.
I mean, this has been discussed before with high altitude bombing, ICBMs. I mean, this isn't a unique problem to drones. I mean, we can do this with various fighter jets too. Hit a target that's,
but even that has a human risk.
Many hundred, oftentimes not actually, because they can launch their ordnance from many hundreds miles away from. It's not like World War II.
Oh yeah, but
they're taking, you know, they're right over the target and they're taking flight.
I'm saying you're even taking the risk of a pilot taking off and landing away.
The risk goes further and further away the more the technology increases. But it's that particular thing is not a conversation that's unique to drones.
Right.
It's been happening. You know, it's been happening since you could bomb things from, 50,000 feet.
So what I think my point, though, just to sum it all up, is the problem with modern technology might be, and again, I think it's inevitable and I think a lot of good comes out of it, but to Adam's point, when you don't have the moral conversation that sort of should hedge it at times, which no one wants to do because the marketplace, this is where I think capitalism has a dark side, right? Because you have to get ahead in the marketplace. So the morals always have to come second to the marketplace because you have to be first into the market to get that low-lying fruit. And the problem with that is, of course, is that we're living in a world of, to borrow that phrase, simulacra. Like, it's not a real world anymore. Like, it's a created world, and AI and all that stuff is. So people don't know what the truth is anymore. They're distanced from it. They don't know what to believe. They don't know whether the information they're getting is correct or not. So you're seeing the rise in you know, a pluralistic view of beliefs that all appear to be equally credible, depending on which group you're in. But it's very hard to find what is or isn't credible anymore.
Yeah, I don't know how to express it really, but I tend to think technology that loses sight of nature or causes people to live further and further away from nature. And I'm using the term nature like very broadly. I don't even know what I mean by it. I just mean like a normal for the natural rhythms.
I think it means you've been hunting in Michigan a lot lately.
I think it's
good for the soul.
Odds were some well, week.
No, I think it's, I mean, this is, you know, I sometimes think it'd be, life would be much better if I lived on a farm, a little hobby farm. I had llamas and things like that, you know, and my
government subsidies for llamas.
Whenever. Whenever I'm thinking about like whether to invest in a new technology, I think, well, how is that going to make my farming cleaner or more efficient or whatever it might be? But when you're just doing advancing technology for the sake of, like you said, Bruce, and I'm a big proponent of free markets, though I don't know much about economics, even though I'm teaching at our homeschool co-op next semester.
Better learn.
If it's just advancing technology for the sake of advancing technology for the sake of the big financial windfall, there's good in that. You can do a lot of good with a lot of money. But there's also a lot of danger, especially you throw into the mix, again, to beat my drum, again, a culture that has zero moral compass. That's a pretty dangerous recipe, I think.
The other big,
but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, the other big danger,
Caleb will tell me,
with technology, is that it, you know, we've talked about even religion being replaced by various things. Technology is one of those ones that the seeming progress, the seeming moving forward, is an object of hope for many people. So then we talk about placing your hope and trust in something. And go to like sort of the explanation of the first commandment, right? Fear, love, and trust in God. And then all of a sudden, technology is a easy place for people to place their fear, love, and trust in, because it has tangible upward benefits today. You're the benefactor of it, and it has a seemingly endless sort of progress forward. And because people have benefited from technology, you can make promises that may or may never come true, and because it's, you know, theoretically endlessly iterative, given enough time, it's sort of like the evolution argument, I can figure that these things will happen. So I'm seeing more and more people putting faith in various technologies, medical technologies, I would even call it food technologies and things like that, for extended or eternal human life. Right. Who's the guy, Brian something?
He thought he's the last generation that will die. He thinks his children will live forever because of medical technology. You can go find the interview.
I'll have to forget his last.
People that say that, like Zoltan said that kind of thing too.
Scientology, isn't it?
But it's funny to me. I love the people that say the next generation is going to be the one that lives forever. You would think it'd be progressive. You know, and it is progressive to a sense, like, but we're to like the 80s, right? So we're to it being pretty common for people to live to be 85. It's not like we're to the point where it's pretty common that people are living to be 250, you know, and you would think that you would get to people are living to be 250 before you'd say the next generation is the one that's never going to die. You know, and they are so wildly optimistic. It's like, they smell their own farts and they say that's pineapple.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't.
So I think the best example of this today is actually somebody called, his name is Brian Johnson. He has this Project Blueprint. I don't know if you guys have seen this where.
The
Fountain of Youth guy. He's using loads of medical testing and data. He's using his son's blood. As a set of infusions, he's examining diet effects, whatever.
Blood.
And
he claims he's reversing his age.
Yes, so they're using biological age markers and stuff like that. And you know, I think human death is avoidable via all this stuff. He obviously thinks that. In fact, he went on an attack on Christianity for like 2 weeks, calling it a death cult, and things like that. But I do think the scary thing about somebody like Brian Johnson is that
the goal is iterative. It is, can I live longer than the oldest person has? Then will my son be able to take Project Blueprint and live even longer, whatever?
Well, that makes more sense, at least.
It does make more sense. But it's one of these things where he's making, I mean, he's making loads of money off this, because now he's selling project, you know, like foods and technologies to people with the Project Blueprint label on them.
He was rich before. I mean, that's
and not. He was rich before.
Like crazy. He does all these weird things. I mean, it's a full time regime for him to do what he's
right.
doing.
So again, it's not, again, the technology that's specifically evil. Like, biological age markers might be useful for people to simply extend their life or treat disease or whatever, but it's the goal of explicitly replacing religion or setting up new priests that we can see there is something here that technology enables. Now, the technology itself has no agency, so I think that the answer to the question, is technology good, is yes, no, maybe. It just depends on the particular use, which means that individuals are, the more technology interacts with our lives, which is to say a ton today, and advancing technologies and iterative technologies engage, the more responsibility is sort of placed on you as an individual to make judgment calls about the use of these technologies, whether they're medical technology, computer technology, how much and what are you going to use on social media? What do you use your cell phone for? Is X medical technology good to use, even in good cases, because it was developed for evil reasons? What, you know, you have a lot of ethical thinking to do. And I think the big danger with how much technology we interact with and how quickly it iterates is that there isn't time to, people perceive there isn't time to make those judgment calls, so they assume that the creators of the technology or our government or somebody smarter than them has already thought of the answers to these questions, and so I get to just use it.
So this is kind of funny. I'm going to say just two things. One, this theologically, the answer to this isn't very difficult. Whenever we attempt to do good, the bad is right there alongside of us. I mean, this is Romans 7. I mean, the good I want to do, I do not do, and that which I do not want to do, that's exactly what I do. I think that every, you know, non-sociopathic person that creates a new technology, maybe unless they're doing, like, technologies that are specifically intended to kill people, even that, I mean, you watch Oppenheimer, they think they're overall doing good because what they're doing is going to end World War II sooner. I'm not sure that's what they thought they were doing, but still, you know, that it's going to save lives for that reason. But every time, because we are sinners and we live in a sinful, fallen world, the bad is right there alongside it. And the problem, one of the problems,
specifically the self-interest, right? Like, yeah, the incurvitas say.
And one of the problems with technology is, I guess, is that just it makes it so much more available, so much faster. So, you think about you things that the internet has made possible, some very, very good things, and it's that you can access faster than you ever could. You know, how to cook a turkey. Well, you don't have to call the Butterball hotline anymore. You can just get out your phone and do it there, and it'll tell you how to do it. But at the same time, if you want to look at porn, you don't have to go be embarrassed and go buy a video or a magazine. You can just whip out your phone and do it there. And so that's all there. The funny thing is, one of the problems with the probably all technology throughout history, but the way we interact with it in sort of modern digital technology, is that even if you take a stand against something, it's sort of creeping, right? I think it would fall into what they call the Overton window of things here. My, for instance, for that is, I remember when the Apple Watch first came out, which was, you were in college.
Yeah, it had to be my sophomore year.
Because I distinctly remember arguing with you about it in my office at the university that this would be my line.
And I got it, this is how bad I am. Yeah. I got it the morning it was announced. I left a class and I drove straight to the Apple Store and got one.
Yeah. So, you lived a much more blessed life as a student than I did. And you know, this was going to be my line. And what was the line? It was allowing a digital technology company to record and or store my biometric data, right? And so that was, you go forward several years, and all of a sudden, last year, I'm buying a Garmin watch. And what is it doing? It's recording my heart rate. It's recording, now it'll take a ECG. It's recording my sleep patterns. And, you know, this stuff just sort of wears on you. And you know, what was once your line is no line. Now what's my line? Well, my line is now getting some sort of technological implant in my body.
Well, it's probably not that. Like you're freak. I had the last conversation.
Oh, the goggles.
Is goggles. The Apple Vision Pro freaks you out.
Yeah,
to the
now watch me in 6 years walking around with goggles on everywhere I go.
Yeah, it's, I think one of the big problems that I question, which, and I'm an early adopter, right? Like I bought the Apple Watch day one. I want an Apple Vision Pro. I'm pathetically
what is
addicted.
Apple Vision Pro.
It's their VR.
Boy, you don't want to know.
It's augmented reality done in a way that consumers will actually use.
It's this. You put these goggles on and you can see the real world and you can see whatever it is you're using to distract yourself from the real world. So no longer will Caleb have to be looking at his phone and ignoring you while you're talking to him to look at Twitter. He'll just be able to have these on, and you'll think he's maybe paying attention to you because he's looking at you, but he's actually looking at Twitter, too, and not paying attention to you at all.
Now, I think I'm on Bruce's team now.
Now,
I
think the problem is, and this is why you adopted the watch, too, and this is why everybody, even people who, like, were really hesitant to get a smartphone eventually break. Like, I know some individuals who didn't have one for what was seemingly unreasonable periods of time who have, in the last year and a half, 2 years, broken on the smartphone.
I've tried to break my wife. She will not get an iPhone.
You
she will not.
Are...
What does she use?
I don't know, like a Galaxy when, or something.
When, okay. No, that's a smartphone still,
like
though.
Like 8 years old.
Yeah, but...
Oh, smart. Yeah.
I'm just saying smartphone.
Yeah.
But here's my point is...
That's probably because it's expensive.
As more and more people around you adopt that technology, you are disadvantaged because it augments human ability. So if you don't have an iPhone, you're actually disadvantaged in the workplace or an Android or whatever it is.
Especially in our workplace.
Because you can't communicate quickly and effectively. You have to use slower methods of communication, less accurate, whatever it may be.
I refuse.
You can't collaborate.
I refuse to look at green bubbles.
Right? Like,
yep.
When they invented bronze, you know, versus steel, yes. Like the guys who had the steel weapons, you know, they did better.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reason my dad got the watch, why? Well, he started exercising and racing again. And guess what? If you are training for a triathlon, a mountain bike race, running, and you don't track your biometric data, you do not use this to augment your training, you are significantly disadvantaged from every person who does use it.
Could just dope.
Yeah.
But if I were doping, I'd need to track my biometric data
to figure out if the doping's
working. And I'm not saying I wouldn't, but if I were.
Right. So eventually you're just disadvantaged. So even, you know, unless you go full Luddite and just say, my methodology here is to embrace being disadvantaged and to withdraw from society and withdraw from the culture like the Amish, and create a society locked at a particular technological point in time, then I can't do, you know, then you're committing to the disadvantage.
The Amish use...
The Amish, though, do you know the Amish?
They use smartphones to run toast when they go sell their wares.
The Amish have computers in their homes. It's very common that they have one room, which is like hooked to electricity.
Because they have businesses.
Their kids use it for school, and that's all it's allowed for.
Yeah. Well, they also use technology for businesses when they go sell their wares.
Yeah.
So,
scan the card.
So even then, right? Even committing to being to disadvantage, you see people eventually, sort of.
Well, it's if you're trying to do that, it's like all stacked against you. So if you take the Amish for instance, let's say they just went like cash only, right? You're losing a lot of business because I don't even remember the last time I ran into somebody that carried enough cash to buy something that was $600-$700, like a beautiful like wooden chest or something that some Amish dude made. You know, so I want to tap to pay because that's how I access large amounts of money. I'll sometimes have $40, $50, $60 on me, but for the rest of it, I want a tap to pay. Now, countries and municipalities and cities and states are, many of them, talking about passing laws where they're cashless. You know, countries are talking about this all the time. So how would you then, even if you're trying to remove yourself from technology, but you needed to sell these things in order to provide the life that is helping remove you and your family from technology, operate that business without adopting some of the technology? This is, again, what I think they call the Overton window.
So what?
And it moves.
So with our last...
We need to have our friend Dave on here to talk about Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah.
Oh.
The fourth turning, Bruce. The fourth turning.
Being the way that North Korea just made billions of dollars to fund their nuclear program?
The question then is, what is somebody who's worried...
Did they cash out, though?
What is...
Did the Bitcoin market jump when they cashed out? They must not have had that much then.
What is...
Dropped a little bit.
What is the average person who is concerned about a particular technology supposed to do if it is sort of inevitable that they will either be left behind or adopt it?
I think one of the things... So not to say I was right, you were wrong with the biometric stuff. But one of the things... So you had early trust... Of course, you ended up being right in the end, but think about it.
Okay, I was right. Yeah,
whatever. You ended up having early trust in Apple that they would not do anything nefarious with your data, right? Which is a big thing I was concerned about at the time.
Now, I based it off of a strong belief from that's grounded in experience with that company.
I said trust. I didn't say it was blind faith.
Okay.
My gosh, get a hold of yourself. It's like I'm some atheist attacking your Christian faith over here.
Okay. All
right. My Lord. You had trust based on your experience with Apple. I wonder how you started using
mansplaining.
I wonder how you started using Apple technology in the first place. But you had early trust that they would, you know, that they would have your back, so to speak, right? And I was concerned that not just that they wouldn't, but that, say, Garmin, Fitbit, whatever, that they wouldn't. Well, it turns out they've all been pretty responsible with this data. At the end, there's not been in the 10 years, 9, 8, 7, whatever years since everybody started wearing these wearable devices. It turns out that none of them have really had giant scandals where they've taken this data and done nefarious stuff with it and sold it and all that kind of stuff. And so the more you kind of waited on it, the more you could, at least for me, I could see that some of my concerns, my early concerns were not as valid as I thought they were going to turn out to be. But to be fair, at the time, like every company using every piece of your data that they could collect for their own nefarious gains was very common. I think, and it's still common to some degree, but it's becoming frowned upon more than it was then and talked about more.
Yeah, so, it still is. I mean,
and if you live in Europe, they're not allowed to do it. Well,
yeah, I think there's a certain set of choices you can make. It requires something that's difficult, which is staying sort of up to date on what the technologies and companies and so on and so forth do with your information or what they're developing or how it's being
used. I would say Apple is probably the safest.
It's for sure.
I mean, the FBI has come to them and said, like, unlock this phone, and they're like, no.
Yeah. San Bernardino shooter?
Yep.
Yeah.
That was the big, that's when it really became major part of public discourse.
Yeah.
They also, there are some, and you just have to investigate, where information is stored locally on your device.
Has no problem accommodating the Communist Party of China and whatever they want.
Correct. So they behave completely differently in Asia as they do in the United States.
But I think that's probably true with all of them, because all of these companies at the end of the day, that you can trace their production back to China.
Yeah. So there's obviously like
their moral framework is grounded in the market, not because they have some objective view of humanity that's good.
Oh, correct. Very, very correct. But even that is hard for the average person. I mean, I don't think if you interviewed the average person with an Android phone and somebody next to them who has an iPhone, and you ask them, does Apple get your data? Does Google get your data? Does Google sell it? Does Apple sell it? Most people wouldn't know, or would answer yes because they've heard it. Yes, they get my data. Yes, they sell it. Not knowing the difference in the way those are handled. So part of this is, if you're going to be in opposition to something, you sort of have to be committed to being one of the more well-informed people on technology and the in the broad scheme, right?
Or yeah, and unfortunately, like for people that can't afford things, one of the ways to tell is how much you're paying for the device, because you're either paying for the device or not, right? So the more expensive things are usually that you're actually paying for. You're paying for the hardware and the software, and with the less expensive ones, you're just paying for the experience of using it, which is cheaper because they're using you.
Yeah. If you're not paying for it, you are the product, right? That's kind of a classic way of saying it. So if you're not paying for social media,
download, you know, they track you and sell your data. That's why
you are the, and that doesn't matter what device you're using then, right? So, and then I think it gets even more complicated with like various medical procedures. I mean, I remember growing up, it was constantly in the news. Stem cells, stem cells, stem cells, stem cells was like on the news every 3 days on cable news about the ethics of using this medical technology. Today, my feed has been alight for 3 weeks. My Twitter has been alight for 3 weeks with conversations about IVF and surrogacy, both of which use modern medical technologies to enable what I think is wrongdoing, but many others would disagree. And so the
question, you think it's wrongdoing because it almost always involves selective reduction
right, of
fertilized eggs.
Correct.
Which in sort of the way we look at that is an abortion.
Yep. And then loss of life. And then surrogacy, I think, is wrong for a whole host of other reasons, excluding the IVF portion. Right. So. But
Mark
you have
Zuckerberg
to...
He testified to Congress a few years ago, two, 3 years ago, that Facebook knows that you will break up with your significant other or divorce before either of the other parties do, with a very high rate of accuracy.
Oof.
It tracks so much human behavior in real time that it's picked up on pattern. Its AI has picked up on human behavior patterns and is a very accurate predictor of a breakup or a divorce.
Will it tell you if you ask?
No. Well, no, they won't tell you that, but the point what people don't realize is, I use Facebook, but I'm just saying, what people don't realize is like the AI that is operating the algorithms at Facebook has a very keen insight into human behavior in a way that we just go on there and look and think like, oh, I'm going to click on this and it'll change the algorithm.
That can't be true for Instagram too.
If you've ever thought that you were unique, special, different, like social media should blow that up for you. You are a predictable, very, very predictable person.
Being interesting.
Well, this is not the same thing, but it's kind of related. When I was talking about my hobby farm that I aspire to acquire, which I never will. I'm too old to have a hobby farm anyway. Llamas, no kidding. Like 5 seconds later, I got a notification on my phone from Easy Llama telling me I have to do my sexual harassment training. I don't know if it's related, but I think, I don't know what my, anyway.
So is there,
you make more money?
Is there hope, or is technological progress sort of just like this spiral, inevitable spiral towards the greatest evils we've ever seen that means that we all have to use it, but eventually we're all going to pay the consequence for it?
I think so.
Yeah, see, I'm on Bruce's team yet again. I think we're all hosed.
It depends, I guess, on how you see the arc of history and how you see eschatology, like how those two things merge, you know, together in your worldview. But history tends to work like a wave, one of Scott's earlier points, right, where it gets to a very high crest, and it's sort of like, we call it civilization. It turns in on itself and it crashes down, and then something else takes its place and starts to rise again. And
that takes time.
Yeah, it takes time, and all this AI and also this stuff, and like people just assume like things will keep progressing and they'll get better and the machines will take over and the whole, but like the arc of history, the waves of history.
That's a very 20th century view of things.
Flattening that happens because it turns in, and it's not an exterior thing that comes in and destroys it. It folds in on itself, and then something just helps it accelerate to its fall.
And eventually there will be an external person that comes back and brings it all to an end.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And all of these various ways that we manifest our sin, even when we're trying to do good, like produce technologies that are helpful and make things easier and X, Y, and Z, those still manifest out as sin and sinfulness more often than not. And, you know, if the Lord does not come before this, it will close in on itself, and probably through some combination of too fast advancement in areas and birth rate decline. And if he comes again before that, he will bring it all to an end, and he will come out in all his glory, and his conversations will be null and void because every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord.
And I would add, I think this is one of the areas where the actual freedom of justification by grace through faith alone is so comforting and is necessary even apart from technology, but technology amplifies this, which is you cannot pick a path forward that does not involve you sinning. You cannot become righteous by your choices technologically. You can make choices that serve the world and the people, especially closest to you in your vocations, well, and thus you should educate yourself. You should be concerned about ethics and the good use of technology. But that when you fold and you get that iPhone and you inevitably tweet or Facebook post something mean, or you use a medical technology that has sinful or atrocious backgrounds to extend or save your life or treat somebody you love, or whatever those decisions may be. You make a decision when you didn't have all the information and you regret it later when you have more of the information that involves technology. You are forgiven for that in Christ. You are free to live this hard, difficult life as saint and sinner serving your neighbor here. And so you have a task. There are people in your life who you've been sent out so that your choices are not meaningless when it comes to technology. You don't just throw up your arms and say, whatever, I'm saved. There are people who are impacted in lives that you affect. But that when you do make the incorrect decision, or the inevitability of sin comes out through all of your decision-making regarding technology, you are free in Christ. You are forgiven by him, and your status before God is not changed by if you adopted a technology too quickly. So, well, guys, anything else here? Very good. Thank you for entertaining this episode. We hope it was a useful or interesting conversation for those at home. If you are enjoying the Thinking Fellows podcast, I'd ask that you share it with family, friends, people that you know, maybe coworkers, people at church. Word of mouth is the fastest way that podcasts grow. People in your life likely trust you or are interested in the same things that you're interested in. So if you enjoy this show, we would greatly appreciate it if you would suggest it or pass it on to somebody else in your life. You can also find links to a couple of the things that we mentioned here. I'll try to find the two books mentioned early in the show and put those in the show notes below. And there's also a bunch of things going on at 1517 right now. And the show notes are just a set of links that are in the description of this episode. So you can navigate to the description in your podcasting app to get links to those various things. We appreciate your time. We will catch you next time. Bye.